Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is your call. 6 years ago, strange colored and bad smelling water flowed out of taps in Flint, Michigan. City officials said they switched residents' water supplies from Lake Huron to the Flint River to save money, but they failed to ensure that the old pipes would not leach lead. It took nearly 18 months before state and local officials acknowledged what was happening. The water was contaminated. Last Thursday, the state of Michigan was ordered to pay $600 million for survivors of the crisis. Anyone who lived in Flint between 2014 and 2016 is eligible to receive funds. Almost 80% of the settlement will go to the city's children and those who were younger than 18 during the crisis, but the specific details still have to be agreed upon. 25,000 children in the city were affected, including 9,000 under the age of six. Some kids developed skin rashes. Others developed more severe illnesses. Some showed elevated levels of lead in their blood, which has been linked to many diseases, including irreversible brain damage, behavioral issues, and learning disabilities. This year, at least one in five students in Flint's public schools are eligible for special education. This is according to an Education Week report. That is a 56% increase from the year before the water crisis began. The Legionnaire's disease outbreak during the crisis is one of the largest in U.S. history, sickening at least 90 people and killing 12. That is according to state data. But a frontline investigation strongly suggests the actual toll is much higher. At a press conference on Friday, Flint residents and activists responded to the $600 million settlement. And here is a clip from Melissa Mays, an attorney and social worker.
For the past 5 years, Mays v. Snyder has bounced in and out of court constantly and consistently. We have had countless hearings, over 15 appeals. We have won in the federal Supreme Court, the state Supreme Court, the 6th District Court, over and over and over again, basically getting the right to sue. We finally won again in the Michigan Supreme Court late July, and the defendants ran out of appeals. So this is where we're at. Is $600 million enough? No, of course it's not. What number can you put on our children's brains, their abilities to learn, our abilities to work and take care of our kids? There's no number. There's nothing that's good enough. Every bit of our recovery has been piecemealed. We have little pieces, but everybody needs to be clear on these pieces and what their rights are. So first of all, we have the pipe replacement settlement, which is about ready to come to an end. We need to make sure that everybody has their water running, because, again, the governor put forth that March order that everybody needs to have their water restored. So there is nothing standing in the way of everybody getting their service lines checked. Everyone in this city needs to have their service lines checked immediately, as soon as possible, because the city put a time limit on of September. Okay, mid-September. So everybody needs to have, if they've not had their service line checked and or replaced, they need to call and have that done. This is important. If not, please reach out to me or the NRDC and we will help. The hotline is 810-232-2558. Please print that. It's important because it needs to be done, because that's one piece. Again, we need to continue fighting for federal funds to get the mains and the distribution lines replaced. And what hopefully was to come of these damages lawsuit was to be able to get filtration systems, interior plumbing replaced, appliances replaced, because if not, your water's not safe. So with this $600 million, it's not enough. It's never going to be enough, but it's one piece. We cannot sit here and say, oh, okay, it's not enough, we quit, because we have been fighting for 6.5 years total, but in court 5 years, and we're not done. The city still needs to settle. The EPA, the Veolia and Land, the engineering firms, and then with the McLaren cases and the Legionnaires cases, those are still all in play. So everyone's voice still matters. Everyone still needs to continue to grab every piece of justice that's out there for them. Right. We need to make sure that all the kids are on the Flint Water Medicaid expansion. We're actually, Congress is actually pushing for an extension on that. We need to make sure everybody's got health coverage. We need to make sure that everybody's benefits stay the same. And this is very important. Please do not cut this part out. Within these 45 days, because everything has happened so quickly, we have 45 days to continue to negotiate, these terms. And one thing I'm personally pushing is that no money that is received by the children or the adults from the settlement be calculated or tabulated in for income and assets for any any of the statewide government or agency programs. No one should lose their food benefits, their housing vouchers, their Medicaid, because they're getting a little piece of justice. So I think that this is something that's important. I'm a social worker here in Flint, so I know the needs, and it needs to be healing, not more additional trauma and shakeups. And I think this is something we can get done. I think that this is something the state would agree to, because they also don't have the staff to sit there and calculate and tabulate this mess and then deal with the people who don't have their benefits anymore, and then deal with people like me who are going to come fight you on it. So again, it has been a very long time. I'm very tired. We are not done. There's no amount set for anybody yet. So when you hear certain amounts for people, nope, that's not done yet.
That is Melissa Mays, an attorney and social worker in Flint, Michigan, where she and residents and activists were responding to the $600 million settlement. Joining us now are three guests. Dr. Pamela Pugh served as Flint's first and only chief public health advisor from October 2016 to 2019. Dr. Pugh is an environmental health and social justice advocate and vice president of the Michigan State Board of Education. Hi, Dr. Pugh. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning to you. It's afternoon here where we are. Thank you for having us.
Thank you. Good afternoon. We're also joined by Sandra Smith-Jones, Executive Director of the R.L. Jones Community Outreach Center at the Greater Holy Temple Church in Flint, Michigan. The center serves the underserved and supports to uplift the forgotten. The center is still handing out cases of donated bottled water to Flint residents. Hi, Sandra. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi,
do we have
thank
Sandra?
Thank you so much for having me.
Hi, thank you so much. We're also joined by Claudia Perkins Milton, a water warrior with the Democracy Defense League. Claudia Perkins Milton was a United Auto Workers trailblazer as the first African-American woman in the region to hold the highest position as a union rep for the Delphi Corporation. At that press conference, Claudia says it's important to remember that General Motors and DuPont also contaminated Flint's water system. Claudia and others have taken a delegation to Washington, D.C. to bring information and stories to the highest levels of government. Hi, Claudia. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Glad to be here.
Well, it's great to have all of you. Dr. Pugh, I want to start off with you. One of the things that stood out for me at that press conference is so many people said it's important to remember that the state has fought us on this every step of the way. Can you tell us more about that?
Yes. I do think that the residents of Flint should be praised for their fight, their continued fight to get where they are now. But when you look at the fact that you had 90 people infected, 12 people that died from Legionnaire's disease, many people look at Flint as another lead crisis. It was more than that. There were total trihalomethanes, which is a possible carcinogen that was in their water. They have weights that were reduced and poor birth outcomes. We could go on and on. And so when we talk about the fact that...
If you'd like to make a call, try again.
Knowing.
Sorry about that, Dr. Pugh. Go ahead.
And they were fully culpable. There was a constant evidence that continues to be unearthed that showed that the state knew that they had made a bad decision at the expense of the health of this mainly community of color and mainly a low-income community. I can remember a time, I don't really remember the date, but I remember when there was this push to move the residents off of bottled water, and this was probably like 2018, 2019. That the state was pushing to get the city off of bottled water, and they were not ready to get off of bottled water from a public health standpoint. But the thought was, let's go to the schools. Let's take the schools off of bottled water. If the kids are off bottled water, then the rest of the residents, that should be our case for the rest of the residents to come off of bottled water. So from my perspective, it was constant denial of science and public soundbook, public health doctrine. And there was a constant PR push to prove that the water was fine and that the residents were overreacting. And so I do think that the state fought this at from every step of the way, something that, that was criminal that they caused. And so I'll leave it there for now.
All right. Sandra, what would you add to that? Just the fact that the state has really fought residents every step of the way in court.
Every step of the way. And my issue with that is, you know, you created this issue. You know it. All of this that we're going through just makes absolutely no sense to me. And the damage that I've seen, especially in children and youth, is just unreal. And so whatever, I'm so appreciative today for this call, because I'm praying that people all across the country are listening. This is just past ridiculous. And for it to drag out, and it's, I don't even understand it.
Hmm. What damage have you seen in youth?
Well, with what we do, we see young children and mothers every single week that come through to pick up water and food. We are still one of the remaining help centers in the city that's actually recognized as a health center. And so every Thursday we are receive water and food, because of course once you've been exposed to lead, and Dr. Pugh can speak on this probably much better than I can, but once you've been exposed to lead, the only mitigating factor is through foods. And so a lot of times there are children in the cars. We also have what we call Catherine's Closet, and a lot of parents bring their children, their grandchildren, and the children's behavior at 3 and 4 years old, they cannot talk good. Mm. They cannot make a conversation with you, and some of them just the behavior is unmanageable, and we were exposed to it in my own family. My niece's baby was my niece had the listeria, and so the baby then was born with the lead poisoning. Mm. And so he just turned 4, and we were just able to potty train him.
Wow. That's
typical.
Right?
Yes, ma'am. That is typical. And one of the things, and I want to congratulate Dr. Monatisha and her fight for the children, but what I've seen more than anything is the adolescents kind of put to the side. That's those children at that time that were 6 and above. That's the children right now that I'm working with more. We allow them to come and volunteer here, and there's a lot of behavioral issues. And what hurts me more than anything is that these children are labeled now. See, they have a label on them. So how do they become prominent in society? How do they work? How do they hold a job going forward? Why? Because there's a label that has been placed on them as either autistic, which isn't the case. They're lead poisoned. Mm. So they will need more attention. They're going to need medical attention, and they're going to need teachers who understand what they've gone through and try to help them, because my great-nephew, he's coming through it. It took him 4 years to learn to talk. We could not understand nothing he was saying, but he's in the school for Educare, and those were some of the children who had been exposed to the lead. So now he's communicating better. He's making full sentences. It was a long time before he could walk. I mean, it's a lot of things that have happened to these children. Mm. And I'm sure Dr. Pugh can speak to it a lot better than I can, but I see it, and I work with it. And then you have the teenagers who are teenagers today, but they weren't teenagers then.
Right.
And I think for from a data perspective, the last time that I looked, I saw that there are claims that are done. That was through a lawsuit with the ACLU. And so 70% of the students that were evaluated at that time were required, there was about 1,300 referrals. 70% of those students required some sort of accommodation. That could be for issues with attention deficit disorder, dyslexia, mild intellectual impairment, and that's through the Neurodevelopment Center of Excellence, that data. So just to support Mother Jones is saying, I do agree.
Wow. And Claudia, when you were at the press conference, you pointed out that in addition to the lead, there were other chemicals in the water. You say that it's important to remember that GM and DuPont also contaminated Flint's water system.
Oh, yeah. There was nothing for you to find. Dead bodies, car parts, PTHMs, which are cancer-causing agents. PFOS and PFO are also cancer-causing agents in the water. And I've taken several classes because I wanted to know more about it in detail. But there's other contributors, like I say, General Motors did their fair share of damage. And on top of that, they found out that the water was contaminated, and they were gone a year before anybody told us. They didn't think enough to share with the community that had helped to build them up, which really ticked me off. And also DuPont, they should be in the lawsuit and made to come back and help clean up the Flint River. That's what I say. And I have a lot of horror stories. A friend of mine passed away from the Legionnaires, and that came from the water. And she was a classmate, Odie Brown. And then my friend currently right now, he had Legionnaires, and he was in McLaren Hospital, and his leg is amputated right now. So we got a lot of horror stories right here near and dear to us, you know, people that are near and dear to us. And then how about the there was a tracking done by some people, and I don't remember exactly where they were from, but they were looking at the Legionnaires' diseases, people that had died from those, and in relation to people that were, it was put down that they had pneumonia, and how many of them were really Legionnaires, you know, so we don't really know the right count for any of it. So there's a lot of skullduggery going on all over the place. You couldn't get a doctor to really diagnose any of us, and it felt like they were threatened or something. I don't know. But I'm going to say this. You go to the doctor, and they were apprehensive about giving you a diagnosis that the water had done something to you. I even switched from one of my dermatologists to another one, and he knew right what was wrong with me because my face was all spotted up, and I broke out in a rash on my arm and legs. And I'm in the public eye, so I was really ticked off. And so I've kind of got it sort of under control now, but yeah, I flew to Washington several times to trek up there so that we could, you know, get the real information to the right people. And I talked to Dr. Peter Gravitt, who's over all the fresh water in the United States. And as I took the delegation and we talked to him and the head of the EPA at the highest level, what we realized was they had not got the real story. So when we started, one of the girls, Gina Luster, she had two bags of her daughter's hair that she brought along with her. And then we had Ashley, what's her last name? I think it's Ashley Liddell. And she's a school teacher, and her daughter was in the hospital for over 30 days, and they had cut part of her lung off. And then we had a lady that was helping with the migrant people that were not certified, and they were afraid to even come to the door to get water because they were afraid of being deported. So they had to send an interpreter there so that they could make them understand that nobody was after them. They could get the water because that they were still drinking the lead-tainted water because of that. And then the stories go on and on. Bishop Jefferson was with us, and she talked about how her grandson was a student and was going to go to Washington, D.C., but he, by the time the water threw him off track, and he ended up to be a CD, maybe E student, and he ended up going later on, but he was not the boy that she knew before. So we all have a lot of horror stories to tell, and that's just a tip of the iceberg. So it's an ongoing fight. So we are the Democracy Defense League, and we are in a coalition. There's a coalition of water warriors, not just Democracy Defense League, but the other one is What Are You Fighting For? And the 15 group, Fight for 15 and Colors of Change, those are all water groups that we all come together when we get ready to do battle. And let me tell you something. Every time the attorneys go to court, and I'm talking about the attorneys at the higher level, when we're in Supreme and Federal Court, they call us, and we get in our cars and we drive all the way to Ann Arbor and or Lansing, and we fight to win. So like Melissa said, in July, we were all there, and we fought, and we won. So, you know, it's just obvious how blatant the cover-ups are, and we're all angry about the cover-ups, and we're all angry that the Attorney General has dropped all the criminal charges, and we have not heard from them since they did that. So, I mean, come on. We need some attention here. And but what they don't realize is that we don't have anything else to lose. We're already at the bottom, so we only have to go up now. So we're going to fight until we can't, and that's the way we are. And that's the way it is.
That is Claudia Perkins Milton, a water warrior with the Democracy Defense League. Claudia and others have taken delegations to D.C. to bring information and stories about the truth to the highest levels of government. Sandra Smith-Jones is executive director of the R.L. Jones Community Outreach Center at the Greater Holy Temple Church in Flint, Michigan. They are still handing out cases of donated bottled water to Flint residents. Dr. Pamela Pugh served as Flint's first and only chief public health advisor from 2016 to 2019. Dr. Pugh is an environmental health and social justice advocate and VP of the Michigan State Board of Education. Dr. Pugh, before we go to break, I've read that a lot of people just don't trust the water. What is the status of water in Flint today?
I believe the last that I checked, the 90th percentile was somewhere around 4 micrograms per liter to 2 micrograms per deciliter. So the levels are below the reportable levels, and Michigan has, ours is 12 micrograms per deciliter, whereas most here in the state of Michigan, which is the maximum contaminant level. I do want to say that, again, we weren't just looking at lead. We were constantly looking for ways. When I say we, it was the community that you're talking to today, the community that fought for to get where we are today, as well as the science and the medical and public health professionals. And we were calling for the state to look at ways to determine, to make sure that opportunistic pathogens were not still in the water. We were looking to make sure that things like PFAS, when the city was on the water for that short period of time, was there any impact to the health? So when we talk about the trust of the water, there was so much focus and emphasis that was placed on the lead that we were not putting enough focus on the pathogens in the water. And that was another pushback by the state. It was that they wanted to move out and didn't want to delve into that and look into that. So it was very difficult for the scientists to research that. But as Claudia mentioned, you know, our pneumonia rates were high, had grown, have increased by double during the water crisis. So residents were not listened to when the water was being switched. Their voices were not heard when their water was brown, when they had the rashes, when their hair was coming out. And then they weren't listened to when the state was trying to pull out and put them back on the water system without the water infrastructure being totally made whole. We also have to look at the water rates, because we were also looking at the water rates, making sure that where this crisis began, that we were not going back to a place where the, where Flint still was one of the highest, had one of the highest water rates. So we could not decouple those two things. So when it comes to the trust, it was that residents and the scientific community did not feel, and rightfully so, that the state was looking at all of the parameters that they should be looking at. And I will also say that, that the water pipes were still being replaced. They are still being replaced. And we said until the last water pipe, that was the Weaver administration, Mayor Karen Weaver, said that until the water pipes were replaced, that we would not come off of bottled water. As Melissa Mays mentioned, there were water fixtures in the home that were damaged. That whole water system was damaged. And so it was a piecemeal approach, and it still is a piecemeal approach to making Flint whole. And this is why the residents of Flint have an issue with the trust. As it relates to the pathogens in the water, you have to move the water. The water has to be used in order for the system to become healthy. So if people are not using the water, then there are concerns, again, with the microbial growth and the pathogens in the water, making sure that the disinfectants are moving through the water appropriately. So for all of those reasons, our residents have a lack of trust. And then on top of that is this erosion of trust in the governmental system and the system that is supposed to protect them.
Well, we're going to take a quick break today. We are checking in on Flint, Michigan. The state recently reached a $600 million settlement to compensate residents for its role in failing to protect them from lead-tainted water. And as you heard, there were a lot of other chemicals in the water. A lot of activists say that this should be celebrated because so many people have been fighting nonstop to get to this point. But the settlement is not enough. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. If you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can email us, yourcall@kalw.org. We're joined today by Dr. Pamela Pugh. Dr. Pugh served as Flint's first and only chief public health advisor from 2016 to 2019. Dr. Pugh is an environmental health and social justice advocate and vice president of the Michigan State Board of Education. Sandra Smith Jones is executive director of the R.L. Jones Community Outreach Center. They serve the underserved and they support to uplift the forgotten. The center is still handing out cases of donated bottled water to Flint residents. Claudia Perkins Milton is a water warrior with the Democracy Defense League. She was a United Auto Workers trailblazer as the first African-American woman in the region to hold the highest position as a union rep for the Delphi Corporation. Claudia and others have taken delegations to D.C. to bring information and stories to the highest levels of government. Sandra, before the break, Dr. Pugh said that pipes are still being replaced. Why has it taken so long to replace these pipes and ensure that you have access to clean water?
Well, that's a very good question. That's a question I think that all Flintstonians have as to why it's taking so long. And I really don't have an answer for you on that. Not at all.
I can chime in.
Please.
This is Claudia. First of all, we had a company to come in to Flint, and they were not the most honest group, and I'm trying to remember their name. But anyway, they were going to houses to replace pipes where there was no lead pipes, because after a certain date, houses were built, with no lead piping. So they went to those, and they were just trying to rake up more money. That was one thing. The other thing is we had a change in administration. Mayor Weaver was on top of everything she needed to be on top of. But we have a new mayor now, and he's kind of slowful. In fact, the Democracy Defense League had to go to in front of City Hall and put him on notice for a mandate that came from Governor Whitmer. And the mandate was that everybody in the city, in the state of Michigan, not just the city of Flint, but in the state of Michigan, could have their water turned on at no cost, especially because of the pandemic. But we had to force him to do his job. And so we finally got that done. But there's no, and I want to go back again, there's no trust because the administrations have not shown us anything but lies and deceit and cover-ups. And so, therefore, there's no trust on much of any level. And then they shut our water pods down in 9 districts. And we have argued and fought trying to get those back, which is why we only have 3 health centers in the city of Flint right now. Unless we get outside donations that randomly come in, there's on Mondays, Bethel Church on Ballinger Highway, we have waters like Sister Sandra Jones gives on Thursdays, and we have one on Tuesday at Ashbury Church. And that's all we got, you know, other than people, you know, just out of the generosity of their heart. Recently, Kalamazoo came and brought 600 cases of water for the Flintstones. So, like I say, there's no trust. And then they have a deadline now mandated for the pipes to be replaced. But, and here again, one more thing I want to mention. If your a house was abandoned or whatever, they didn't replace those pipes. So you're going to get a mix of mishmash. Some of the pipes are being replaced, some aren't. So if the bad water is coming through, it's going to go through all the pipes, good and bad. And so that's why there's a push now to get all the pipes replaced. And then we had a time with the construction people. We had Goyette coming in replacing pipes. Then there was an argument about a different company coming in. So it's just been a whole litany of things, not just one thing. You know, so that's why the pipes have not been replaced. But we're supposed to be on schedule to get them done now. And there is a deadline. I'm not sure what the deadline is, but they need to really televise it, radio it, whatever communication they need to let all of the people in the city of Flint know exactly what the deadlines are. That needs to happen from the mayor's office.
Okay. What about Governor Gretchen Whitmer? Claudia, what, if anything, has changed since she became governor in 2019? Before that, she was a member of the House of Representatives in Michigan, and then she was a state senator.
Well, she said when she was running that her thing was, excuse what I'm going to say, but this is how she said it. She's going to fix the damn roads. That was her main claim to fame. They got some roads being fixed, but that was one of her major things that she was running on. And we also were supposed to be getting the water pods opened up, but that has not happened. So some people have lost faith in her. And then with the Attorney General's office, in conjunction with the governor's office, we're still waiting on criminal charges against the culprits that have poisoned us. So.
Right, because that was another thing that a lot of, sorry for interrupting, another thing that people said at the press conference on Friday is that they are still calling for government officials to be criminally indicted.
Oh, yeah, we all are. We all are. You know, it was so obvious and it was blatant that they covered up. Some of them even pled guilty, and they dropped the charges against them as well. So and then they fired one of the guys who had been investigating Todd Flood, the criminality, and why would you get rid of somebody who's been in there delving in really hard and building up cases? I would have still kept him on the team if I didn't let him be the lead. You know, there was just things that we didn't understand, and we asked for them not to get rid of Todd Flood. So, you know, it's a lot of distrust on so many levels, and a lot of people are just disheartened with the current attorney general and the governor because of the criminality portion of it. So, not being handled the way we feel like it should be handled. Something should have happened by now. It's been long enough. And then they had time limits on whether they could be prosecuted or not. And then deals were cut, you know, and all this kind of crap where people could, you know, just about get off scot-free. So, no trust. You see why there's no trust.
Right. Dr. Pugh, what would you add to that?
Two things that I would add, and I'm sorry, earlier I misspoke. It's not micrograms per deciliter. That's a science quirky thing, but it's parts per billion. Our levels that I've left seen are 4 parts per billion. But one of the issues that we had in the administration when there was this changeover, there was obviously the water pod issue that were abruptly ended under Snyder, and we were hoping and told by the Whitmer administration that those would be brought online or that there would be definitely access in a way that wasn't provided at that time to residents. We would work that out. I wanted to bring up 2 points. It was very important that the bottled water remained and was accessible, and mainly through health centers and delivery to those unable. And that was because while the work was being done, the earth was shaking, and there was this high probability that lead could be loosened into the water system. So that is why we were remaining and pushing to remain on the bottled water until those lead pipes were replaced. I will also say that we were surprised under the Lieber administration when we began meeting with Gretchen Whitmer and her team, because they were many of the same faces. I don't think that there was any turnover from the previous administration. There were people who are part of that 15 that are were criminally charged that were still in the state government system. And so that was startling and surprising to us, and it was not good for this trust that we're trying to rebuild. I want to also say, when it comes to trust, we were going through a whole process with a whole team of folks and engaging community to determine what a trust in the water system would look like. So there was some time, there was a time frame and time benchmark that we had to help to rebuild that trust in the water system. But, you know, I will say, as the question with the Whitmer administration, one of the biggest surprises that we had was around the similar or the same staffing that we have issues with under the previous administration, and then also with lack of access to the bottled water or some sort of alternative water until we could get the pipes replaced. And then I will also say is the interior plumbing.
And Dr. Pugh, we should add that COVID adds another layer of difficulty to all of this. I mean, it's so hard to just continually wash your hands with bottled water.
Absolutely.
when we looked at our COVID rates in Flint, in Genesee County were the highest in Flint. They were the highest in the state. There was a fatality rate of upward of 12%. It's at 8% now, so it is probably still one of the highest in the state, but when you look at 12%, that is very high. But when we look at COVID, we know that we had to keep our immune system up. We know that all of these things that we're talking about, that cocktail of chemicals and contaminants in the water, definitely impact the immune system. Having access to water to hydrate, which we tell people to stay hydrated to prevent and address COVID symptoms if you have it. And then we also have to look at washing your hands and making sure that people had trusted their water. This was a community that had not been fully utilizing their water and could not trust the water system to do all those things.
Sandra, is there anything else you would like to add about the need for officials to be criminally indicted?
Oh, I think it needs to happen, like, right away. Mm-hmm. You know, the thing that gets me is when they were interviewed. Now, this is my position. I believe that the attorney general we had at that particular time did the minimal. And in doing so, that meant no one was actually could be indicted up to the point where they would go to prison. I'd like to see them in prison. I'm so serious. Because of the lives lost and because of the extent of damage, continuing damage that's done. That's my issue. Now, I may have a different perspective on it than Claudia and Dr. Pugh when the attorney general that we have now, because that was my first question, is why would she drop the charges? I mean, that really angered me. I'm going to be honest with you. And especially because we're working hard, the three centers, every single week to try to meet the needs of the residents. So I was really quite angry. I live in Flint. I'm not just one of those persons that live on the outskirts. I actually live in Flint.
Me too.
My workers and all live in Flint and work in Flint. So I began to kind of look into it. And one of the things that I was told, and of course I'm not an expert in it because I try to do the things that I need to do every day to keep things going. But when I looked into it, one of the reasons that I heard that the charges were dropped is so that they could recharge them and those charges would stick and those people would be then held accountable for their actions. Because for the governor to get off scot-free, you know, we can talk about Governor Whitmer, but she didn't create this problem. Snyder created this problem. He knew it. He knew about it. They tried to hide the documentation. They understood what was coming in from the EPA. All of them tried to sweep this stuff under the carpet. So I would like to see this attorney general that we have now, I'd like to see her keep her word. She said the charges were dropped so that they could actually gather the proper data and information so that these people can actually be charged and the charges stick. You know how sometimes you'll run a caution light and the police will pull you over to the side and say to you, you know, because the light turns red just as you cross the street, and he says you ran a red light, and the person said, oh, no, the light was yellow when I crossed it. So then he gives them, you know, okay, well, this time this is a warning, go on. I don't want to see a warning. I want them to get the ticket. This is what I want. I really want to see, I think the people in Flint, if they saw more legal action being taken, that's at least some satisfaction. We have received no satisfaction whatsoever. And I'm at a point where I'm not one of these people to continuously point fingers at this one, point fingers at that one. I believe that we need to get in there, do the job, to get it done, and get some kind of satisfaction. That's why the people are so disheartened, because they see no growth. They see no hope. When, you know, my husband, who is Bishop Roger Jones, often says, a man, if properly trained, can live under the water for a minute. But a man cannot live 1 second without hope. Mm. And that's what has happened to us, is we have lost our hope. And so when you lose your hope, you just become disgusted all the way around. And so that's what I'm seeing. I'm seeing people still lining up at 4:30 in the morning, wrapped around for almost 2.5 miles to get water at all three sites. This is ridiculous in 2020 going into 2021. I'm just not comfortable with what I see. I'm not political enough or involved politically enough, like Claudia has been here and has been fighting all, you know, all throughout the term. And she talked about some things that I think are excellent, such as the PFAS. All of these things, when the lead came out, it exacerbated them. It made them worse than what they were, but it also brought attention. So, you know, I hate to say it, but we need somebody to take a stand and to say, we're indicting these, and this time these indictments are going to stick. I think if we can do that, then you'll see, like, the domino effect. Everything will begin to happen. People will know we've got to pay these people for what has happened. I'm one of these people. I'm on my third dishwasher, And I'm not talking about a cheap one. I'm talking about the KitchenAid.
Yep.
I'm on my third washing machine. I'm talking about a Maytag. You understand what I'm saying? And so I know the effects of what it has done, but I think if we can start legally indicting these people and making these indictments whole, then you can get the finances that need to go with it. Why? Because you've got the proof. See, the problem is the proof is steadily being swept under the carpet. And so it's like, well, if you leave it there long enough, people will forget about it and it'll go away.
Nope.
Okay? But what about those people that are still in line?
Well, and just quickly, Sandra, we have a call, but I wanted to ask you. You say that people are standing in line at 4:30 in the morning to get bottled water. Is that because they know it'll eventually run out if they're not in line soon?
No.
At that early time?
Oh, yeah. You mean by the time they get to, by the time we get the water to their vehicles? Yes, ma'am. That's why they're in line that time of morning.
Wow.
Yep.
Well, we're gonna take a quick caller. Eric in San Francisco. Thank you for holding, Eric.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, quickly, I saw a documentary several months ago where President Obama showed up to be helpful and to be a calming voice. And he takes a small sip of the water on the podium. And it's not very convincing that he said, when he says the water was safe at the time. Would they like to speak on that?
I would. This is Claudia.
Yep. And Claudia, just to remind everyone, this happened in May of 2016.
Right. And I was sitting three rows from the president. And what happened was, you know, we didn't see where the water came from. That's the first thing I want to say. And I spoke on this on MSNBC in Washington also. And so he gave the appearance that the water was okay to drink, because of the act that he did there when he drank the water, because he asked for some water. They went behind the partition, got him some water in a glass, and they brought it to him. He drank it, and he said it was fine. So that gave the appearance that the water was okay to drink. But we don't know where that water came from, if it came from a bottle, a hydrant, whatever. So, no, sir, that was not a true reading of the water was fine. And so I wanted to clarify that. I was sitting three rows from the president. And I actually spoke to him on that day, and he held my hand so long, I had to hold the other one up with the other hand. And I asked him questions even about the people that were being served, really looked at. They were looking at the children, and they were looking at the elderly. But I said, but what about those people in between? And he really couldn't answer my question because he said, Obamacare. I said, let me repeat myself because you don't understand what I'm saying. I said, what about the people in between if they don't have a job and they're too sick to work? Well, it stumped him, and he couldn't answer. So his team swooped in, oh, Mr. President, we'll take over from here. So those are the kind of things, you know, that happen. But no. The water was not good to drink when he did that. No, sir.
Thank you for the call, Eric. Does anyone else want to jump in and provide your thoughts about that? We don't have that much time left. Dr. Pugh or Sandra?
I'll just say that the CDC puts out crisis risk emergency time information, and they have a manual. And we saw here in Flint where at least 50% of households experience increased anxiety, stress, or depression. And when you look at that third manual and you read that, and that was put together way before the water crisis, and it talks about distrust in communities, especially when there's a crisis and especially when it's a man-made crisis. So, again, it's not going to be a PR campaign that gets us out of this crisis. It's going to be bringing the people along and showing them the science and making sure that at every step of the way that they can understand that a government that denies science, denies them their voice, ignores them, is now looking out for their best interests. I will say that I'm rooting for Governor Gretchen Whitmer. I'm rooting for Attorney General Dana Nessel. And I am hoping and hopeful that they will do the right thing. Right now, I do understand why there's question and pause. And, you know, we just have to hold everyone accountable. And that's to protect the health and well-being, the physical, mental health of residents so that they can trust in a water system that's a water system where the system is healthy, where the water is quality, safe, affordable water. And I'll stop there, and I thank you for this opportunity.
Dr. Pamela Pugh served as Flint's first and only chief public health advisor from 2016 to 2019. Sandra Smith-Jones is executive director at the R.L. Jones Community Outreach Center. Claudia Perkins Milton is a water warrior with the Democracy Defense League. Thank you all so much for your amazing work, and thank you for joining us.
And thank you for having us.
Thank you,
I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call. On the next Jora Call, we'll rebroadcast our conversation with MSNBC correspondent Jacob Soboroff, author of Separated, Inside an American Tragedy. In 2018, he exposed the living conditions of 1,500 children who were being held at a former Walmart in South Texas. Physicians for Human Rights says the Trump administration's family separation policy is a systematic campaign of torture. Join the next Jora Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you.